That can't fly in the face of work.
Getting your shit done.
So, you know, the inherent thing here, CD, is like the ability to ruthlessly manage your time. I always hear this, you know, time's the one thing you can't get more of. I actually catch myself saying that sometimes. I'm like, that's bullshit, actually, because you can get more time for the things that you want. You just aren't ruthlessly prioritizing how you're using it.
Oh, that's a big distinction right there.
Right. I mean, yeah, obviously it's like the stupidest thing on earth. Yeah, I can't go get another fucking minute out of a 24-hour day. Like, that's just the way the world literally turns. But how you use that time is up to you.
Yeah, Steve Chandler says, if you're complaining about not having enough time, all that means is you suck at saying no.
That's exactly right. I say no.
And Warren Buffett said that was his greatest skill.
I say no to shit like all the time.
Most of us never learned how to train our brains, which is why most of us needlessly settle, struggle, and worse, suffer. My name is Chris Doris, and I want to make brain training mainstream. This is my series, Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I'm interviewing badasses from all walks of life on what mental toughness means to them and their unique approaches to strengthening their minds. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I'm your host, Chris Doris. And before we get to our guest today, our typical housekeeping item is, if you aren't getting your daily dose mental toughness tip in 30 seconds or less delivered every morning around 6 a.m. wherever you are in the world, every day of the year, and if you're not also getting my Tuesday weekly blog posts, and if you're not getting notifications of these new Tough Talks episodes that come out every other Thursday, then let's go ahead and fix that effortlessly, virtually effortlessly, by going to christopherdoris.com/lists, L-I-S-T-S. ChristopherDoris.com/lists, name, email, click, and you get all the goodies. Our guest today is a longtime friend. I have, I met Larry maybe about 10 years ago. His name is Larry Schertz. He's the CRO, the Chief Revenue Officer for a fast growth enterprise software company called Confluent. And I met him when he was a sales leader. He's an executive vice president at Salesforce. So that's 10 years ago, and Larry has become one of my best friends in the world. I know his family very well. I've done work with his sons, and his wife, Andy, is heroic for tolerating him. And they have a beautiful relationship. We will talk about that, and as do the kids. The whole family is really spectacular, and that's really going to be one of our talking points. It needs to be, is how does he pull all that off, you know? So shout out to Carson and Parker, fellas. Love you guys. And so what we're going to do is I want to dig into the backstage view of what is it like to be not just a CRO of a fast growth company that's killing it, but to be great at it, you know? So this episode is going to be valuable for anyone. But if you're a CRO, or if you're a sales team leader at any level, or a salesperson, there's going to be a whole bunch of gold in here for you. All right. So Larry is here. Let's not keep him waiting. Where are you at, brother man?
There he is, right over there, everybody. Yeah, that's him right there. The man, my brother, Larry Schertz.
What's up, CD?
My man. So great to see you, dude.
How are you, man?
This is the best damn day of my life.
It was yesterday?
Up until today, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I appreciate your asking. You asking me that question is my reminder to actually have that be true, so that you just did me a favor by asking. So appreciate you.
Here for you, man.
Yeah. Well, and you're also here for the tribe, man, for the Tough Talks tribe. You know, there's such a huge segment of the Tough Talks tribe that's in your world. Huge, huge segment.
Yeah.
You know, of people in the, not just in sales, in specifically enterprise software. Yeah. Enterprise software.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we're speaking directly to a whole bunch. Now, everybody that's listening and watching this is going to benefit, because the stuff we're going to talk about is solid and is useful for everyone. But for those of you that are in the industry, just perk both ears because we're speaking right at you. I got a whole bunch of questions for you, brother. I don't know that we won't get to, well, I don't know. Maybe we will. But let's start with this one, man.
Yeah.
I'm very looking forward to hearing your answer to this. Like, what do you do in order to maintain a, you know, and the word positive isn't my favorite word because it seems a little weak, you know, but like, how do you keep people tough? Like, what are you doing to keep your culture strong in, you know, in a high growth company?
Yeah. Oh man, like how much time do you have?
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, I would tell you, first off, a lot of the enterprise work and a lot of the tribe that you've created, you know, this goes back a long time for you and I, right? This goes back almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, you and I, by the way, just so you everyone knows, this is your second Tough Talks podcast, and the last one was 5 years ago, and so much has changed.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're right. Yes, you were right. 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for that. And I think you've served folks like incredibly well. So I love you. I'm super grateful. Haven't met anyone that's like, wow, that was wasted time that I spent with CD. So
you just haven't met them.
I mean, I think that sometimes, but they don't think that all the time.
You have a guy. That's you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
and that's you and me hugging it out.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I think this is like daily work. It's kind of funny that we're talking today. Yesterday I really had like a challenging mindset day. Woke up just weird, you know, long weekend. And, you know, in the role that when you're in whether it's a CR role or whether you're in any leadership role, it's like, you know, your people are kind of looking to you to set the tone, set the pace, help create the mindset, help create the culture. That kind of never goes away, whether you're feeling it or not. So,
yeah.
You know, I would say that this is daily work. It's daily calibration. It's daily checking in on yourself. You know, where are you mentally? Why is that happening? Is that serving you at that point in time? You'll laugh. I probably spent an hour and a half in stuff yesterday that was not serving me, and I knew it wasn't serving me. But I think just the awareness, it's daily work. And I think the awareness that that it's really on you to make a lot of stuff happen, help create a lot of things. You know, you got to step up.
All right. So how are you, how do you connect with your salespeople, not just to keep them engaged, but to keep them?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's hard in today's climate as well. You know, I mean, it's been a super tough talent market for, this won't be lost on anybody watching, for probably, you know, a couple of years. There are people out there in the market that are viewing, you know, that their jobs is, you know, almost transactional. It's really tough to build a culture of team and a culture of accountability and a culture of trust in the remote world. You know, lots of companies are remote first these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like when your interaction with your team is like you and I are doing, and you're doing it, I don't know, once a week. Everybody has hard jobs. They're all working their asses off. And that's a tough thing to create a situation where people want to do the best work of their lives in the company that you're working for, and do it for you, you know, regardless of leadership.
Larry, so many people over the last decade since I've known you, you hear it. I know I've shared a lot of it with you. I'll send a message. I forward it to you when I hear it, saying that you are the best leader they've ever worked for. So I need to know, don't humble down on this. We need nuggets here from you, bro. All right. What are the things, honestly, specifics, what are some things that you make sure you're doing to keep your people pumped, to keep your people happy, to make them feel important, to know they fucking matter?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been, right or wrong, I've always been a super transparent person. I've always called it the way it was. And I've tried to do that over my career with a huge dose of empathy. An understanding of what people are going through. And something I work on all the time is just articulating the why. You know, it's super easy when you're running fast in a hyper growth company and you've got a lot of what things to go do. And for me, something that's always benefited me is bringing the why with the what. And making sure that people are along on the ride. And now that doesn't mean that everybody agrees, but it does mean that we articulate why that's important for the company, why that's important for the mission, and you hear people out and then you move forward. So I think, you know, in that is transparency, and that is direct communication. Inside of that is a pretty large empathy score, not sympathy score.
What's the difference to you?
Empathy is understanding. Sympathy is like feeling sorry for something.
I don't know if that's right.
I don't know if that's
According to Gary Ridge, who's the chairman now of the board, very recently former CEO of the WD-40 company. How many cans of WD-40 are there in your house?
Way too many. I just see some. I just cleaned out because we got so much fucking dog hair in the house. I just cleaned out the door rail with it just squeaking all over. Yeah.
There you go. So anyway, when I interviewed him, I asked him. He said the same thing, man. I asked him probably the same exact question, right? And he said virtually the same exact thing you just did. You know, I said, "What's one of the most important things to be a great leader?" And he said, straight, without hesitation, empathy. I just wrote it down. You said a huge dose of empathy. That might even be the title for this podcast episode. And so I asked him again what I just asked you, and he gave a really cool analogy. I'll share it with you. I said, "What's the difference?" And he said, "Okay, so say you and I are out on a boat on the ocean in rough seas, and you're puking over the rail, and I come over, I put my arm around you, and I go, 'I'm so sorry, CD, you're struggling.' That's sympathy." He starts puking with me. That's empathy. I thought that was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I,
meeting people in their world.
I think it gets confused a lot, right? I mean, I think especially people that I've worked for, that I have a huge amount of respect for, that have been very, very direct and very candid. I still knew that they understood and that they cared about the outcome. You know, it wasn't selfless. And I think you can have both. I think you kind of have to have both. If you're going to get to a senior leadership level, you have to be able to be direct and transparent and communicate well, and you have to have a high empathy score. I just don't think you can be successful without it. Not with the caveat that you gave when you asked the question, which is, how do you keep people?
Mm-hmm.
I think you can have short-term, maybe even very successful short-term outcomes without those things. But you won't have longevity, and you won't have loyalty. And when you move jobs or you change careers, the benchmark should be, did the most talent or the most talented people in that industry and field, do they want to go wherever you go? Kind of needs to be the benchmark.
Yeah.
You leave a company and none of your direct reports and none of your team wants to go work for you, brother, you got a problem. Like, you did something wrong.
Yeah, that's a sign.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So let's break it open a little bit more. How do you, like, I know you well enough to know that you never, I say this with 100% certainty, want to stop learning and growing. With specific respect to empathy, how does somebody get better at that?
Humility.
Oh.
I mean, I think it's tough to have an honest learning score without humility, I think. You have to acknowledge that, you know, at best, you're great at a couple things, but you certainly aren't great at a ton of things. And it's like the all of us are smarter than one of us kind of mentality. I think this has cultural implications as well. I've always, for me, it's like if I'm not learning, I'm dying. It's one of the reasons, you know, for this, anybody that's at Salesforce or worked at Salesforce that knows me, that this was the reason that I left Salesforce, not because Salesforce wasn't an amazing company, wasn't because I wasn't hugely grateful and respectful of everything that that company gave me. It was more a function of I had stopped learning, which means I stopped growing. Which means I get bored. And then, you know, Andrea starts kicking me in the ass. So I think you have to keep
That would
learning.
be the wife, by the way, folks.
Yeah, sorry.
Who's part of the next question? We'll
You
get.
got to be, you just have to have that. I think it's humility and it's curiosity. And I think if you've got those two things, you're set up to learn.
Yeah. So staying with this before I get to the family stuff, because that's a big question too. What about with the people that are whiners? How do you empathize with a whiner?
I don't.
I don't didn't think you did.
I
It's
also, you
difficult to
know what
visualize.
though? Here's what I will say as well. Because I'll be honest, like before I met you, I probably whined a lot. So point being,
Well, I meant wine with an H. Okay.
Well, yes, true. And
Right.
I do think there is a trigger that can be switched and that can be completely unlearned. Just the mindset of complaining or whining and just what a terrible mindset that is. But it's allergic. You know, like people catch it and then it kind of grows. So I have zero, absolutely zero tolerance for it. Zero.
Yeah, but it's still okay. Well, I think you're starting to answer the question though, because yeah, you are a hard ass, but he's like, you hear the hard ass talking about the power of empathy. And so you got a really high performer who also happens to be a pretty good complainer, but they're still delivering goods. Okay. They're crushing numbers. All right. But they might be bringing some toxicity to the program. How do you empathize with that person, or coach them?
That's exactly what I was, that's a great coaching opportunity. Because the odds are that is a huge unlock for that person to grow. It's probably the reason that person hasn't grown faster, or if they're upwardly mobile and they want to do different things at a higher level, that's an anchor. So I would see that as a coaching opportunity
Yeah.
to kind of like just say like it's an awareness thing. Like you know this is holding you back. It's not just holding you back professionally. It's probably holding you back personally. It's just. And you're probably not happy, as happy as you could be, because you're in that just shitty mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're empathizing with the person. You're not supporting the behavior, but you're supporting them.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I
And
mean
none of
that.
us, yeah, none of us are exempt, okay, from that conditioning. In other words, complaining, whining is a learned behavior. None of us are exempt from that learning, right? It's a human condition. Fact.
I will say the caveat that you gave, though. Was this was a really high performer.
Okay.
I think that so I'd probably have a little more stickiness with that person. than a dramatic underperformer that was just complaining, because then I'd probably think that I have a talent problem and I have a mindset problem.
100%. Yeah, that
That's
person
a
probably doesn't
different.
belong on the bus.
Yeah, somebody's either shouldn't be on the bus, or they're on the wrong bus. Maybe there's a different spot for them. But typically, people like that that are toxic, you probably should just root from your organization. Moving them to a different place is just going to cause a different problem in a different
As
place.
my late great mentor, Jim Myers, always said, invite them into their future.
There you go. Let me introduce you to your next opportunity.
Everyone deserves to thrive, right?
Yeah.
And you're just not doing it here, so.
Yeah, listen, the companies have an obligation to train, to enable, to new skill, to upskill. Like that's an organization's responsibility. You can't expect to get like a perfect thing coming into your organization that's going to operate perfectly, especially in high growth, hyper growth companies, because they're probably doing something different than what's been done before. But you need some very, very transferable things coming in there. And if not, you probably made a wrong hire and you should take care of it quickly.
So let's switch it up for a second to go into personal life,
Yeah.
because so I love your family. You mentioned Andy, your wife, and I know your two sons extremely, extremely well, Carson and Parker.
Yes, you
And
do.
your relationship with your wife is amazing, like your best damn friends. It's really beautiful. And your boys love you so damn much. Your family's solid, man.
Thank you,
So,
brother.
and you're busy as shit.
Yes.
You're running a big ass, you're the CRF and O.
Yes, I was
Conference,
reminded of
for fuck's sake.
that. I was reminded of that before this call as well. But yes.
Give us some tips, man. Because I'll tell you what, let me tee this question up nice. My last guest, right? The last episode right before you,
Yeah.
Joe Perrone, I call him Time Wizard. Right, it's the guy that used to complain about not having enough time. You just not enough time today, all that bullshit. Okay, so he changed his whole. He had like a health scare, and that's when he changed his program.
There you go.
Right? So now he's a coach, coaching busy people on how to have your life on your terms and never complain about time, to create time. All right, so not using time as a damn excuse to sacrifice your greatest, the most important things. And you definitely don't do that. You do not sacrifice the most important things. Do it. How do you do it?
So it's changed, right? Like both boys are kind of gone. Like Carson's gone, out, has a job, off the payroll. So like Andy and I were thinking that's pay raise time right there. Like we got a pay raise.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Parker's a junior, but doesn't live here. So we're empty nesters. So I think the prior how I manage the prioritization has changed. When the boys were younger, like the family was the priority. I got really, really good around my time management, my prioritization. There were things that I just ruthlessly prioritized that I
Okay,
would
okay. So
miss.
let's slow that down, okay?
Yeah.
Because that's a mistake that I am constantly hearing about. That people, not you didn't make the mistake, but the make
Oh.
mistake of not doing that. Okay,
Yeah.
the mistake of not doing that because, for fear. So we got to slow this down. This could be a game changer piece of the conversation for a lot of people, man. All right, because
Yeah.
you know what? They're in a convincedness that if they say no to certain things, right, in order to say yes to life priorities like family.
Yeah.
Then they might not be able to keep their job or keep their lifestyle and all that stuff.
Well, that's complete bullshit.
Yeah, well, it's very convincing. A lot of people are convinced that it's not.
Well, then, like, yeah, I mean, I do hear that as well. I don't think that if you are, I don't think that any company today, if we just talk about the professional environment, right? Just professional environment. No company today, if you need to go do something with your family, no company today that's worth a shit that
Okay,
anyone should
I
work
asked
at,
the caveat,
yeah,
right?
that anyone should work at, would not provide you that time and more. not a single company. So like for the people listening, that if you're in that situation with your company and you've tried to take time off, or you needed to leave early to go to a kid's basketball game or to go do dinner with your wife, which you've been doing for 20 years, then I would say you should leave and go find a place where you can do better work. I would have zero tolerance for it. It's not negotiable. Now, that said, that can't fly in the face of work.
Getting your shit done.
So, you know, the inherent thing here, CD, is like the ability to ruthlessly manage your time. I always hear this, you know, time's the one thing you can't get more of. I actually catch myself saying that sometimes. I'm like, that's bullshit, actually, because you can get more time for the things that you want. You just aren't ruthlessly prioritizing how you're using it.
Oh, that's a big distinction right there.
Right. I mean, yeah, obviously it's like the stupidest thing on earth. Yeah, I can't go get another fucking minute out of a 24-hour day. Like, that's just the way the world literally turns. But how you use that time is up to you.
Yeah, Steve Chandler says, if you're complaining about not having enough time, all that means is you suck at saying no.
That's exactly right. I say no.
And Warren Buffett said that was his greatest skill.
I say no to shit like all the time. All the time. I move stuff in my calendar all the time. I create space for, just the other week, I was like, I kind of run all the clock, right? Because I get up early, got the Europe team in the mornings that I'm working with. And then, you know, the APAC teams are coming on board, you know, at night, Pacific, when I'm home. And I place my health in a very high, like that's a high priority score for me. And I did not get my workout in that I normally got in the morning. And I bounced a couple of stuff out of my calendar to go just do a Peloton ride for a half hour. And yeah, the stuff was important, but it wasn't near as urgent and important as me like getting square. So I think when you're serving, I think when you're in a leadership role, this is my analogy for this. I don't know if you and I have talked about this, like, you know, when you're on an airplane and they're like, hey, like, put the mask on yourself first.
Yeah, right.
You got to put the mask on yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Have to. And then prioritize your time better. I've sat with multiple people, like many, many people over, you know, course of my career. And they're like, there's so much of this. There's so much of this. And like, insert the whining and the bitching into the narrative. And then I literally broke down the workday. There's plenty of time. There really is.
Listen to that. Hear that, people.
Plenty of time. Just do better with it.
That's my favorite line in coaching. Just do better.
Just do better.
It's really that complicated. I have an idea. Do better.
Do better today than you did yesterday. Hey, thanks. I didn't even think that was an option available to me, but I'm going to go give it a run.
Yeah. Well, the belief, though, right behind it, joking partially aside, is that it's a scarcity-based belief, right? Like, and it's so popular. I mean, seriously, how popular is it to say there are just so many hours in a day. Everyone's heard that shit. You know, it's a popular belief system. It's nonsense. It's bullshit. And I love that when I was referencing that guy, Joe Perrone, he said something really powerful in that interview, which is time is simply a construct that man created. Fucking use it better. Create your time.
Yeah.
That was like, nice.
I don't know. Only so, many only so many hours a day.
But yeah. And use them better. Do better. So, yeah. But what you said was, you know, you prioritize your greatest values. Take great care of yourself. Put your mask on first, right? Which is why I always have time buffers between all of my appointments. I'm never rushed. I don't serve well. I can't do my work good if I'm rushed. I suck.
Right.
I'm toast. I can't be who I need to be amazing.
Yeah.
So I take care of that. But then other people are like, well, yeah, but those are so many hours that you could be coaching. Yeah, well, I'd be do shit coaching in those
Correct.
Hours. Right. But the other half is get your shit done.
Well, and yeah, let me go back to the, because this is a pretty constant, at least in the business that I've chosen to do. It is a very common thing that the calendar gets slammed, right? It just happens because there's no shortage of shit to do, right? Like, so I don't want to be numb to the potential that that can get overwhelming. It does for me as well. You kind of have to extricate yourself from that being overwhelming, and then, okay, then, well, like, what are you doing about it? Or are you just going to be a victim of your calendar? Because it's really what it would be. Like, you're a victim to all of those things. Yeah, some days are going to be fucking long days. Suck it up. Like, it just is. You get paid a lot of money. Like, do your job. And some of that happens. You know, you may burn it on both ends for a couple of days. And you're paid to do that. At the same time, like, don't be a victim of it. Like, lean into the fact that you get to go do that. There's people who would kill to be in the situation you're in. My guess is most of the people watching your podcast are people that are pretty fucking blessed with the opportunities they have.
Think you make it.
So you're
Well,
in.
you can make the argument that that's true for all of us. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Get to. I like that you threw the get to in there. Get to versus have to. And also, you're using good language, right? Victim versus creator. Are you a victim of your circumstance that you're choosing? Right. Like, you chose the job.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Own it. But there is a, you know, just we'll move on a second. I did, but this is a big thing that, you know, when I'm coaching people nowadays, on our very, very first session, I asked them to make an agreement with me that they're going to put time buffers on the front and the back of our coaching sessions. So there's never any, I got to bounce in 2 minutes. So it doesn't happen because you're already bounced then. Just hang the fuck up because
Yep.
you ain't with me. I
Yep.
ain't got nothing for at least 15 minutes after this. So I'm fully with you. You know,
Yep.
now I can do that. It's easy for me. It wasn't in the beginning because I was trained as a the therapist who does 50 minute hours back to back to back to back to back. I wish I had video, a game tape of like how shitty was I as a therapist on my like sixth client of the day, hating it.
On massage time frames, right?
Dude, yeah, totally looking forward to the beer, you know, and the game later. And you're like,
Yeah.
yeah, life sucks. But
Well, listen, but hey, I don't know, Chris. Like, there's only so many hours in a day, so, and I have to get all these things done.
that's the belief.
Yeah, 100% it's the belief.
Yeah, and it's supported.
Yes.
Okay, so COVID brought out a whole new way of being. Meeting, 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 no buffer. Man.
Yep.
And the irony in it is that that evolved into being under the belief that that would be productive. That's why it is that way.
Right.
And of course, the irony is that's not.
Yeah.
But people are still in the convincedness, Larry, that it has to happen. And I submit, okay, sometimes in order to get excellence created, sometimes it might need to be back to back to back.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be always.
No, it's like it's crunch time, right? It happens. My thing is, and I, this is almost a daily, almost twice daily thing for me as it relates to time. I really don't think
What do
there's
you
a
mean?
more important, just managing my time better, you know, all the time. I'm looking at my time, no pun intended. But it's, I really don't think there's a more important thing than, and creating, to your point, on the front and back end of the, like, creating time to, like, the space to consume. Zoom's fucked that up for everybody. It's almost worse now where we're in this hybrid world. You know, like, we're out visiting customers again, which is great, but customers are still in this hybrid mode. So, you know, you'll do like three Zoom meetings, then you'll run to a customer meeting, or and then, you know, a Zoom meeting, customer meeting, then three Zoom meetings, and it's, I mean, and if you don't take control of it, you'll get sideways. 100%. It'll consume you.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Like, you can be like, and it's not valuable.
You see The Matrix?
The newest one?
No, just the original.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how, you know, they hook them up with this, they put that thing in there,
Yeah.
And it's like,
out of them.
I know judo. Right. So if you could do that with your salespeople, what are one or two or five or whatever? What are the things you would want them to know? All of them. You could just upload it.
Not unlearn. You're talking about putting it in, putting the.
Well, no, it could be unlearned. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, totally. Yeah, right. Well, all right. What would they unlearn? So what they unlearn a thing, then what would be true?
Well, yeah, one begets the other. I think you and I have talked about this a lot. I don't think there is a more important thing than mindset. I really don't. But by the way, because I have always felt, regardless of your profession, but it's intrinsically true in sales. It's competition.
Yeah.
Just is.
Yeah.
Like there's somebody out there, multiple people, that are after probably the same thing you are. And I think I don't think it's bad language. I know.
Good work. I see you doing the work right now.
What's that?
Everybody, just hold your thought. Don't lose your thought. I just want to screenshot what you just did. That's him doing the work, folks. Larry just did a piece of the mental training, and it's from the mantra, watch your mouth. More specifically, watch what comes out of it. And if you don't agree with it, swipe left. So he just did that.
Yeah.
Which is nice. That's a very sophisticated mental training behavior discipline. So props to you, bro.
Well, props to you. Yeah, I know there isn't anything more important than mindset. So in the either unplug, which would be the victim complaining kind of mindset, things happen to you, which is very prevalent in my industry. And they aren't bad people. They need help. If I could unplug that, if I could plug in a different, like a control mindset, that'd be number one. I actually think everything would flow from that. Everything. I'm assuming that these are smart, hardworking, passionate people. So if I can take that and I can get the right mindset, nothing would stop them. Nothing.
Roger that.
But it's not like back to the analogy. Is it an analogy or metaphor? Like the plugging in.
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor. It's work. So nobody's going to like spend an hour with you and have you teach them all this shit and then walk away and go, got it. No worries. And then 6 months later, have complete command over it. It doesn't work that way. It's a, like I said yesterday, it was a huge mindset challenging day for me. I was like, I was in my own shit about where my headspace was. And I fought it all day. Andy was like laughing her ass off at me last night. I'm like, I could not get out of it today. But I was hugely aware that I was there. I was hugely aware that I could change it. And I think if I could do anything, I'd put that in everybody. I'd put that in all of our kids. 100%.
You did.
Because that's, you know, we're just building the next generation of weakness. So no offense to parents. Like, it's like, this isn't being taught. Kids aren't learning that they have command over these things. They aren't learning that the intersection between how they think actually governs how they feel. And that they've got access to all of it. Nobody's teaching them that.
It's starting, but it's way behind.
Is it?
Yeah. You know what? There was a mother. This is really beautiful. Somebody brought this to my attention recently. Mother who lost her 6-year-old boy in the Sandy Hook shooting tragedy decided to start emotional mastery training in schools.
Oh, wow.
Right.
It's nice. Tragedy creating from it.
Wow.
Yeah. None of us are exempt. We all learn to be victims, brother. I believe it's part of the human experience. And we get to, as you said earlier, we get to, if we can find the training and learn the work, you know, we get to free ourselves from that conditioning. So we stop experiencing reality so goddamn problematically and stuff, and just find complaining to be pathetically stupid, you know, and get a faster creation from all sets of circumstances. So that's the
it's one of my favorite shirts, the complaining is stupid. When I wear that out, people are like, you're so right.
I know. Who wouldn't it be funny if somebody walked up and said, that's bullshit?
No, completely disagree.
Thank God for my complaining.
I love to complain. Complaining's amazing.
It makes me better.
It performs so well when I'm complaining.
Yeah. I feel great. It's so nice. Speaking of better, getting better, what are some things what do you do? And so you mentioned Peloton, right? And is there anything else in your world in addition to, you know, health and exercise that you do, you know, to continue to sharpen your soul as a human, as a leader in any way?
Yeah. I mean, I this goes back to the learning piece of it for me.
Yeah.
Like I've been fortunate and blessed to just surround myself and be surrounded by and get to be around people that are like so much better than I am at a myriad of shit that I'm not good at. You know, some people call that the network effect, like whatever the language is. But I stay super close with those people. You know, and it's not obviously, you know, I have relationships there. So that's kind of the beauty of it, is there's a close relationship and I'm learning. It's the kind of the perfect storm. But there's so many, and this, like, this for me, this transcends work. This isn't just, you know, oh wow, like, how are you handling that market problem and how are you organized in Japan, you know, all this shit that you kind of figure out along the way. It's valuable. It's not like that's invaluable, but the connective tissue with people that are better than you are, I think is huge. And you have to hire that way too. If you aren't hiring people that are better than you are at the thing that you need help with at a minimum, like, what are you doing?
Nice.
So for me personally, it's that network effect.
What's your favorite part of your vocation?
Right now it's that, it's the challenge. It's the learning. It's the growth mindset. It's like all this stuff that I haven't done before. You know, in the edges I have, you know, like building teams, hyper growth companies, organization, like all the, like the shit that's inside of the job. I've done that stuff before, but doing it in the macro climate that's happening today, doing it, fighting the competing pressures of cost reduction and growth, continuing to find like great talent. Like, that's the stuff that is super cool for me. Like, there's nothing better than hiring like a complete badass stud or studette and bring him on board, and you're like, ah, yes. Like, just go.
Giving Shermie a shout out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one of them for sure.
I sure.
But yeah, I think that's the stuff right now that's super cool. Hard and cool. You know,
right, but good. That's a great combo, man.
Inspiring, right? Yeah. It used to be, you know this, it used to be primarily money driven. Like, that was the thing. Didn't really care what I had to do. Well, I should put some brackets. it didn't matter to some extent.
Like, can you edit that out?
Yeah, let's cut that. But it was primarily the mobility, like the upper mobility was always about the next best thing. It was always about chasing the next dollar, right?
Oh, that's learned too, man.
100%. I mean, listen, and it's at least there's a very measurable outcome there. but it's also one that you could just keep chasing. Like it never really ends. Like, how much is enough? And I don't think I'm at that point yet where it's like enough is enough. It's an and. Like, there's just so much else that I want, that I'm getting now, which is cool.
That is cool. So when you give your speech, when you are inducted into the Sales Hall of Fame, what are you going to say?
Is that a thing? By the way, you know what I was thinking about? I don't know why it came up early in this conversation. Nobody like graduates with a CRO sales degree. You know, very, in fact, like when I started, nobody was even teaching sales in school. I'm hearing they're doing this now. Shout out to Kevin Guthrie, because I was talking to him the other night.
Nice.
And I made some comment like that to him, and he's like, no, they're actually like, people are teaching sales now, which is pretty cool. But most of the people that end up in the gig that I'm in that have the age, if you will, that I have or anything close to it, nobody went to school for sales. Either sociology degree or your marketing degree or business degree. You know, none of us were lawyers. You don't see a lot of lawyers that are in sales. You don't see doctors that are in sales. You don't see firemen that are in sales. So it's very learned. It's very tribal. It goes back to like the network implications of you could learn the wrong shit early, and you can either learn from that and do better, or you can learn from that and continue it. I mean, there's just so many paths that it can go, but nobody graduates with a sales degree. They will soon, though, I'm told. Should be cool.
All right, well, way to avoid the question.
I'm getting there. Pump your brakes. So I don't know that I'll be, if there was a thing that I would be, but thanks for the mention. I would just talk about some of the incredible people that I've been able to work with. You know, it's less about the outcomes right now. Or I'm sure it will be even more so, you know, when I stop doing whatever this is. It'll be more about the people, like the journey, the experiences, but it's all people-based. Like, if you can't dig that in the jobs that we're in, you're in the wrong gig. I always ask people that want to move up into leadership. I'm like, why? They're like, well, you know, I really want to help people. I'm like, do you really? Like, that's hard. Do you like really? And I think for the people that really embody that and enjoy that, that's what all of us will talk about in the Hall of Fame speeches, would be the people.
Amen. Well, I'm looking forward to being in the audience that
Yeah, I'll shoot you an invite if it gets to me first.
day. So, who are some of your heroes?
Heroes, oh boy.
Yeah.
I don't have many.
Okay.
I'm
So,
not a big hero person.
all right.
I don't know why. That could be an ego problem that I have.
You heard it.
What's that?
Uh-huh.
There are people that I have like incredible respect and admiration for. Maybe that's similar. I don't know, but I don't have this, hey, you know, so and so is a hero of mine. I
Okay,
just know.
greatest teachers.
Keith Block is one of them for me, ex-CEO of Salesforce, co-CEO. My wife, since she just walked in, but I would have said that if she didn't anyway. You can see the look she just gave me.
Andy.
CD, we're on a podcast, so you might not want to walk out.
Right.
That's fun.
Oh, great.
You know, I think that, so that's kind of professionally. Personally, I just have some very good friends that I think have run life right, you know, that I just have a huge amount of respect for. I'd stick you in that bucket. It's that not in the hero bucket, but in the admiration, respect, gratitude bucket, in a huge way.
Thank you, brother.
But I've never kind of I've never been like, wow, like JFK was a hero of mine.
Sure.
First off, I didn't know him. Second off, I've never attached much to things that I've never really been able to deeply experience. It's got to be a very personal thing for me, you know?
Awesome. What's up with your shirt?
Oh.
Shirts. Talk, what's that mean?
Well, first off, this was the shirt that I told you this. I completely zoned out that you and I were doing this today. Like insert the I was still prepared, but I forgot comment here. And I put the shirt on today because I wasn't feeling that great. And I'm just like, I need a little mantra help. This is one of my favorite ones. It's like just the perception that there's good and bad, and there's so much language I could talk to. It's like, wow, that was really bad. It was really, you know, there's just it feels to me like the biggest thing that the biggest pivot that people can make. I've actually got some people that I work with and used to work with that, you know, will catch it. I still catch it a lot. You know, I'm like, wow, that was bad. I'm like, no, that just didn't go kind of how I wanted that to go. So,
Oh.
I wear this shirt, you know, a good amount. It's just the concept. It's just kind of just is. I mean,
I love it. I call it the great neutralizer mantra. It is the antacid for complaint. So,
I have not heard that one from you.
that's pretty fresh. As is the five consecutive territorial cups that ASU has won over U of A, saying, yeah, that's the team that's lost five consecutive territorial cups to the actual real Arizona State University.
No one even recognizes that your school exists. They don't. The only reason that you feel that way is because you live there. No one outside of Arizona even knows that they exist. I'm just telling you.
That's that, folks, is
I've tested this
all fake
in
news.
globally. I'm like, do you know who ASU is? No. Have you heard of University of Arizona? They're like, the Harvard of Southeast Texas. That's like,
I've
yeah.
never heard that. That is great. That's great.
I heard
Outstanding.
that in Singapore the other day. I was
So
shocked.
just stop with it. So I want to take a moment to give you some sincere thanks, brother, because you have profoundly changed my life. You know, in multiple ways. You know, I'm just so thankful for you and your belief in me and your inclusion of me along the way. You have brought so much opportunity and so many amazing humans into my world. And you're right at the top of that list. And so is your entire family. So I love you with all my heart, brother. Thank you for it. And thank you for
Brother.
your wisdom. Thank you for your commitment to service, man. Thank you for your unapologetic approach to getting the most out of people. It's nice. I love what, you know, I still work with a bunch of people that miss you and love you at Salesforce and elsewhere. And I love hearing the stories, and I can tell you they'll never stop. You know, God, he was scary sometimes, but goddamn, I'm better because of him. That's all I hear, man. So thank you and props to you, brother.
Man, I'm blessed. It's been like it's been an incredible career journey, but it's all on people.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, that's what makes it super special. You know, you mentioned like loyalty and not leaving. Like, that's people. People work for people. And when you're at the level of the game of the people that you're coaching and the people that I've been fortunate to be around, you gotta love it. You gotta love what you do, and you gotta love the people around you, or else it's not gonna work.
Amen. And it's a privilege. Thank you, brother.
Good seeing you, brother.
Good man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
He's a special cat. He's a wild cat. He was making up all that bullshit about you, people not knowing who ASU is. That's all nonsense. Do your own tests. He and I have a good bit of fun jibber jabbering on you know, the whole. It's a cool, you know, he went to the University of Arizona and I went to graduate school
at Arizona State University, and of course worked with sports teams for, 11 years after that, and at ASU. And so, we have a good, real good, it's massive rivalry in sports, right? Arizona State University versus University of Northern Mexico, I think they're called. So anyway, you could tell, I mentioned to Larry after we hung up that that's a quality of conversation that can only happen with 10 years of really working together in the trenches and getting to know each other deeply. I love how smart he is. I love how committed he is. And I said this at the end, how unapologetically committed to, doing something that I find very rare among great leaders. Maybe it's not rare among great leaders, it's rare among leaders. And it's what makes a lot of leaders great is the combination of two skills, which is one, impeccable accountability, like in your face accountability, and two, doing it in a way that your people know that they're safe with you and they know that they're going to be better because of you. And he's got that. He dropped some great bombs. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you took some takeaways. A few of mine are a huge dose of empathy. That's pretty good. Isn't that great? It was just what I was just saying, is that he brings, he has been referred, he's not for everybody, okay? But I think he's for most, honestly, because, he really he cares, and he'll hold your feet to the fire, and he'll do it with empathy. And the bit about time, ruthlessly manage your time. And the number one variable, mindset. And he gets it. He does the work. All right, folks. Thanks, as always, for tuning into Tough Talks. And until next time, create miracles.